Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as 1798part2.org as well as republicreview.org. You are listening to the only show that provides the actual solution, even the process, the model of how to get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. This is a very special program, so I would give you the number, which is 215-867-8255. However, I kind of have a monologue, and I kind of have a special monologue to give you kind of a historical context regarding Christmas in America and, you know, how the how it became a actual holiday by the government. So it's kind of a constitutional perspective. So I would just hold off on your calls and try calling on Christmas Day if you're jonesing for a talk about the Constitution while you're enjoying your new Christmas jammies or what have you, and having your cup of tea or whatever your preference is for staying warm on Christmas, hot cocoa, whatever. I will also want to tell you that we have our crowdfunding set up on, and it's our campaign set up on GoFundMe, and it is called Reclaiming the Republic. We would invite you, now that you're finished with spending money on Christmas, we'd invite you to help support what we need to do. We're trying to get reimbursement. We're basically trying to just get our money back in what we had to spend on going out and having a great success in Wyoming. And we're going to end up having to go out there again. Making these trips costs money. So we would just ask that you can, if you can, please contribute. It doesn't have to be much, but, you know, it literally anything can help, and we appreciate it. We're just trying not, you know, Washington couldn't, he probably could have subsidized part of the war, but he wouldn't do that. We're at a point where we're moving forward because we're just so convinced that we need to, not only we need to do this, but there is no other way. And we've been taking all this time to prove to you, if you believe that there's another way or if you can't buy into this, give us a call. Give us a call tomorrow or anytime, and we will hash it out. There you go. But Reclaiming the Republic on the GoFundMe site is how you can help contribute. And so you can, at the very bottom of the campaign, we get into the actual cost, what it costs for the travel, what it costs for food and so forth. So by all means, help contribute. And I would appreciate it. If you don't have the money, but you have a computer, you have the ability to contribute, then I would ask that you send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And get involved that way. We will basically engage you with doing some research, or we may already have the research for you and let you start running. The 2019 session is just around the corner, and that means the Constitution Club is ready to go into action. Have you joined yet? You need to go to theconstitutionclub.ning.com and sign up and get involved with that movement. It's pretty simple. If you don't do that, you're going to miss out on a historical event, because I truly believe as this message goes out, more and more people are going to start getting it that we can rescind the 17th Amendment. And so again, if you want to just help directly with us, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Moving on, because like I said, this is the Christmas special, but I want to go through these obligatory things. I want to also thank you for tuning in. There's plenty of other content. There's really professional entertainers out there that we compete with. And I realize that I am not the polished, professional, conservative entertainer. But to me, it's about the content. It is about the truth, the knowledge of what really happened, what we need to do, and those types of things. And we believe you can see through that. We believe that sometimes it's not a matter of whether somebody says or eh or whatever, too much or not enough. What it is about is a solution. This is a solution-based show, as you know. So thank you for tuning in, and thank you for growing this show and getting other people to listen, and please continue to do that. As we get greater visibility, this is growing, and we appreciate that. There is no sign in the news because I scanned the news, as always, and the federal government has no intentions in ever relinquishing any of the usurped powers, roles, or responsibilities. And so because of that, we're going to have to do this. You and I are going to have to put aside our differences, put aside our self-interest, and get involved and do this. It's not about you. It's definitely not about me. It's about the Constitution, our future, and our posterity being able to obtain prosperity. I'm getting better at saying those words together. Anyway, I don't want to go through the news. I don't want to handle, you know, any of the events that, you know, might associate to this year, next year, or what have you. What I want to do is I want to focus on how we got to know this thing that we engage in as a tradition as Christmas. Now, in my programs, I speak a lot about Platonism on this show. Platonism is basically giving credit to the father of communism, who was really Plato. Plato was the person that penned the concept of statism, where the state controlled everything. They determined who married who and who did what and so forth. It was truly the first concept committed to paper that exposed communism as what it is. So with that, I want to dive into to Christmas. And so today, this Christmas show should give you a macro view on how the Platonists or the statists and communists first began mass manipulation in the United States. Keep in mind, the new Platonist efforts actually began in 1776, or actually before that, but they were formalized in 1776 by Adam Weishaupt. And he happened to write the Illuminati Charter in 1776. And oh boy, that's conspiracy stuff. I hear that name go with, you know what? The evidence is there. He actually wrote it. He called it the Illuminati. This isn't something being made up. So I know that people like to throw the C word out there. And today, that C word only really applies to Christmas. Okay? So moving forward, the Platonist effort was a direct contrast to what the framers were doing here in our republic in that same year. And it was a direct contrast to what Adam Smith did in his Wealth of Nations that exact same year in Scotland. Okay, so there were three profound documents that came forth that literally created a huge, well, actually two were harmonious. The Declaration of Independence, as well as the Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith, those two worked together. Those two actually were able to function in tandem, because they were harmonious on the principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. If you've never read The Wealth of Nations, get it. It is an excellent book, and he makes very salient points, and he really gets the idea across that, one, we need government, but we need to control government for very specific purposes to serve us. But we need to actually open up the market and allow free market principles. He doesn't use the term free market principles, I don't think. And I've read it a couple of times. But he talks about how allowing a free market actually improves productivity, it improves product quality, and so forth. And so anyway, over to the dark side or the evil side, Adam Weishaupt was already working on a concept that literally was the beginning of, let's just call it the globalization of government. And so one of the things I also want to point out, and I'm going to pull it up here, because if you go to Red State, or not Red State, you go to my Red State Talk Radio podcast page on Reclaiming the Republic, down towards the very bottom of the page, you'll actually find my document on rescinding the 17th Amendment. You'll also find, you know, the colored-coded Constitution, Plato's Republic, like the Communist Manifesto, and towards the very bottom, you'll actually find a document called Proofs of a Conspiracy Against All the Religions and Governments of Europe by John Robinson. And I want you to take a look at that. That book was written, I think, in 1792, somewhere around there. In other words, this 1776 Illuminati and their efforts and everything else started becoming recognized by people outside of the Illuminati and outside those influencing circles. And so the conspiracy theorists actually began way back when, long before mainstream media was able to label you as a wacko because you believed in conspiracies. So I'm at a hard break. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so the Platonists, with creating this facade of a perceived good for all, you know, they're going to be doing this because this is the best thing for all of us, when it actually is serving the very few elite or a very small circle of elitists that are controlling the world. And as billionaires rise to the ranks, that circle gets a little bit bigger. And as people figure out a way to, you know, take away a piece of their pie, like Bill Gates, Soros, and so forth, then that circle gets a little bigger. But what they're doing is really, and what they did with Christmas is really setting the stage for future manipulations, because they realize how powerful changing paradigms can be. This is why an accurate historic perspective regarding Christmas, I think, is really important, or at least an accurate perspective with regards to my filters that I can provide you. Because obviously there's, you know, there's different ways people can read and interpret. And by all means, go out there and get the information. There's a gentleman by the name of Kenneth Cook who has written The Truth About Christmas. It's a pretty interesting article. It's on a page that I can't cite, so forgive me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to give you my perspective of how he presents the information, inserting a lot of little facts that he's not necessarily including. And by all means, you can go and look at his long, lengthy article regarding the truth of Christmas. But I honestly think there is a necessity in at least having an open and honest dialogue, because what we believe has been a long-term evolution tradition has actually been a huge paradigm shift and manipulation. So let's start off with the early 17th century. If you understand what was going on, a wave of religious reform was changing the way Christmas was celebrated in Europe. This was during our first awakening, both here and in Europe, and that was the 1600s, and our move towards religious tolerance. You got to remember, in 1680-something is when Maryland, I believe, or 1660-something, it was the late 1600s when Maryland was the first state to actually pass an ordinance of tolerance towards Christianity. In other words, the state itself was tolerant towards other non-state-sponsored religion, and I think it was the Anglican Church. And so that was the beginning of creating this concept of tolerance. This was also during America's first religious awakening, like I was saying, and the move towards this tolerance. At the same time, we were, I'll call it entrenching slavery, or I should say blacks as slaves in America, because I believe it was like the 1650s. Slavery began if people coming to America were first indentured servants. I've talked about this before. And so for a good 20 some years, there were all different types of people, different races, blacks, whites, different races from Europe. And as they came here, after 7 years, they became a freeman and they owned property. Well, that means that there were blacks, and Thomas Sowell reports this, that there were free blacks in America before blacks were chosen as the preferred slave or the designed slave, when England basically decreed it and many of the colonies started decreeing it. And so they entrenched a racist slavery in America by, I want to say it was like the middle of the 1600s, I mean. I think it was the early 60s. And these facts are in my book. I don't have all of them here. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to paint this picture of setting up how America and England were vastly different in recognizing Christmas and, or I should say, the pagan holiday and celebrations and so forth. So anyway, in Europe, Oliver Cromwell and his Puritan forces took over England in 1645. They vowed to get rid of the decadence and this paganistic celebration, this what we call the winter wilding efforts in England. So they were working really hard in trying to, purge England of this debauchery. Charles II was then restored to the throne, and with him came the return of the popular holiday, good old wilding time. This was also a precursor to the Glorious Revolution, which basically set up in the 1680s. And so all of these things were kind of getting ready to happen as far as what was going on in America, the Glorious Revolution that gave England the Bill of Rights, which actually emboldened the American framers from revolting because they realized that their rights were being violated. Anyway, the Pilgrims, who were the English separatists, came to America, what, about the 1620s? They were even more orthodox in their Puritanistic beliefs than even Cromwell. I spoke about this on my Thanksgiving broadcast and how they too failed in their implementation of socialism. Anyway, the pagan version of Christmas was not a holiday in America. And like I said, it was considered a wilding where people just got drunk and debauchery and so forth. And I'll even say that the commoners were the ones who were, you know, the people, the commoners, the minions, the poor people, the elitists weren't really the ones that were, you know, out in the streets getting wild and so forth. And it ended up becoming later and later as it progressed into becoming a rioting type of celebration as well. From 1659 to 1681, the celebration of pagan Christmas was outlawed in Boston. Anyone exhibiting Christmas spirit was fined 5 shillings. In other words, if you were drunk in public, because that's what they called the Christmas spirit, or I should say the wilding spirit, because I don't think it was really Christmas. It wasn't called Christmas at that point in time. In contrast, down in the Jamestown, so Boston, it was, you know, the Puritans, you got fined, it was illegal. In Virginia, down in Jamestown, Captain John Smith reported that the pagan Christmas was enjoyed by all without incident. In other words, it was a success that nobody got hurt or anybody, you know, got killed or what have you. After the American Revolution, English customs fell out of favor, including the pagan Christmas or the pagan holiday of the winter wilding. In fact, Congress was in session on December 25th, 1789, the first Christmas under America's new Constitution. There was no wilding or lewd and lasciviousness behavior. Christmas wasn't declared a federal holiday until 1870, June 26th, almost a century later. Up to this point, Christmas was recognized as a pagan holiday, as I've been saying, and it was never a Christian event. It had no association with Christ whatsoever, and in the 19th century, some Americans began to embrace this pagan Christmas again. Elitists started reinventing this whole concept of Christmas and changed it from a loud and rowdy carnival into a family-centered day of peace and nostalgia. And how did they do this? Well, what happened in the early 1800s? And so that's when, you know, things really started changing. And again, I'm going to give you a macro view of what was happening in the early 1800s so that we can kind of get, you know, into what the reality is. So I'm hoping that as I'm kind of going through this, this is piquing your interest as far as, okay, so, you know, there was no Christmas trees. There was none of these concepts that were kind of pointed towards Christ and how they converted them. There were many of these pagan symbols, but they weren't Christmas symbols. These were the godless pagan symbols and celebrations that were out of Europe. So at the end of the 18th century, or the end of the 1700s, was the beginning of this class conflict and turmoil. So I'm trying to set the picture here. If you understood what happened in Europe, like the French Revolution, this was a result of the sentiments began, you know, spreading, and these sentiments of hate towards the royals and that type of stuff, because, You got to understand, the French Revolution was what? It was a communist revolution. They tried to overthrow that. And what they ended up getting and creating was Napoleon Bonaparte, who was a despot and was not a communist. So they failed in the first communist revolution. The next attempt was much later in the 1800s with Otto von Bismarck, and that wasn't even a revolution. He just instituted socialism and destroyed Germany, and that ended up being the catalyst for creating two world wars and all sorts of problems. But let me go back. If you, that means that I'm on a hard break, so I can't go back. We'll go back when we get back from this break. So please stay tuned. And I'll be right back after a couple of promos. Thank you so much.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So, in the early 19th century, unemployment was beginning to rise. It was actually kind of high. And gang rioting by the disenchanted classes, especially the lower classes, often occurred during what we call the winter wilding, or what we know today as the Christmas season. Now, you got to understand, Christmas is the time where, you know, the fruits of your labor is where you were able to sustain yourself. And so people, you know, had very little because the abundance of the summertime and fall with the harvest and everything else, people usually did pretty good. But, you know, things got pretty slim pickings, especially when there was snow on the ground. Life got pretty difficult. They didn't have snowmobiles and ways to traverse the terrain the way we do today. They didn't have roads, highways, or anything else. So, you know, mobility and all those types of things made life a little bit tougher. And so, like I said, in Europe and in America, the unemployment started, you know, becoming a factor in the early 19th century. And as a matter of fact, I even mentioned that it was in the 1830s when pastors actually went to the White House and demanded that Andrew Jackson create a jobs program
for the poor because they couldn't afford to take care of all of the people that were out of work. Everybody was starving, even the pastors, because, you know, obviously this was the first attempt in abdicating the responsibility and going to government and saying, you've got to take care of this problem. Okay, so some of the Americans at the time really started enjoying this winter wilding. And let me just tell you, moving up a little bit, because I'm bouncing around, early, mids, earlies, and so forth. A little bit later in 1828, just as a point in fact, the New York City Council instituted the city's first police force in response to a Christmas riot. Interesting, right? They didn't have an instituted police force until Christmas, or I should say the wildings. Even before this, elitists were being harassed, and this galvanized the elitist intent into beginning this effort in changing the way Christmas was celebrated in America. For more aptly stated, what they were trying to do was change the behavior. And so the growing interest in this wilding time of year was getting bigger and bigger. More and more people were targeting the rich, harassing them, stealing them, you know, beating them, throwing stuff at them, burning stuff. I mean, it was a pretty riotous time of year, and they were tired of being harassed. So, you know, if you want to understand, you know, it makes sense that if they said, you know, if we make this about a religious thing, then maybe people will behave good. And that's how people started putting this together. And so in 1819, a gentleman by the name of Washington Irving wrote the sketchbook of Jeffrey Crayon. Yeah, I think it was Jeffrey Crayon. And so this series of short stories about the celebration of Christmas in an English manor house began shifting the paradigm of Christmas. And so these stories started promulgating and getting out, and more people were getting these. And the stories were about an English squire who invited the peasants into his home for the holiday season. And so in contrast to the problems faced in the American society, the two groups mingled effortlessly. And so this whole facade started getting promulgated. And the fact of the matter is that this was all concocted, again, by Mr. Irving, Washington Irving, as he wrote this. And if you look him up, you'll say, you know, he was kind of the author of creating and designing the blueprint in moving people into making Christmas about Christ and about religion. In Irving's mind, Christmas was a peaceful, warm-hearted holiday bringing groups together across lines of wealth or social status. In Irving's fictional celebrations, the disparate classes enjoyed what we imagined were ancient customs. Irving's book series was not based on any holiday celebration he attended. In fact, historians say that Irving's account actually invented tradition by implying that it described the true customs of the season. In other words, he was making it up as he goes along, and he was telling everybody it was fact, right? So the early 19th century was also putting this, you know, into the bigger picture. At the same time, they were creating this Christmas association or this religious association to this winter wilding. There was also the beginning of the Second Awakening in America. This was the birth of the evangelical faith that was beginning to literally start spread throughout the Republic, and people were beginning to enjoy peace from the end of the American Revolution. So, got to understand, the American Revolution was still going into the beginning of the 1800s or the 19th century. Now, people go, hold it. That revolution ended in 1783, 1784, we signed these treaties? No. Britain never honored those treaties. They kept on harassing. I tell people that they just kind of let up a little while, and then they came back with a vengeance. And so the War of 1812 really was part two of the American Revolution. They were still impressing people. They were still doing, you know, nefarious things. And so the technical end of the American Revolution came by the Treaty of Ghent, signed in 1814 by both sides, England and the United States. And that's when England actually started honoring the treaty, because they realized that they, you know, they did some real damage. They burnt the White House, and they did some real damage. But they couldn't beat us, and they realized that it was just taking way too long, and they had to let it go, right? I mean, that was 20-some years, 30 years of them, you know, stewing and going, God, doggone it, those Americans, we can't let them get away with this. Anyway, another thing that was going on, because as you know from the Constitutional Convention, I had told you that Mason and the abolition movement had already started. I mentioned that in the North Carolina ratification debates, they were talking about how this abolition was growing. It was growing literally legs. And they said, hey, all the northern states have already abandoned their slavery, you know, labor camps or what have you. And so what are we going to do? So in addition to this great awakening that was forming, this new peace that we were actually going to start enjoying from Britain, and this whole abolition movement, what ended up happening was if you understand what John Quincy Adams did after he was president of the United States, he's one of the few. I think there was only one other president that became a senator and, you know, did public service afterwards. Can you imagine, you know, the elite, Mr. Wonderful, or, you know, divine and dear leader Barack Obama becoming a senator again? Or any of our former presidents today becoming a former senator? Well, John Quincy Adams became a senator and spent the rest of his life in public service fighting for the abolition movement. And then shortly after he became a senator, Martin Van Buren was the one that created the gag order. He was the first Democrat, or he was the founder of the Democratic Party, really. But bottom line is that there was turmoil, you know, unemployment and abolition. All of these things were going on that were giving people, you know, more and more reasons to, you know, have a wilder winter wilding than the year before. And so if you kind of look at how this all started coming out, it became a pretty good form of manipulation, because religion was a huge factor in America. Alexis de Tocqueville really spelled that out. America was good because America was great because America was good. And what he meant was because we were religious and were convicted in our beliefs, in our religious faiths and so forth, that was why America was great. And so as such, the North and the South were actually not only divided over slavery, they were also divided over this Christmas thing. And as a matter of fact, guess which side preferred the winter wilding to the other side? Yep, it was the South, because I already told you that in the North, it was already being banned or had been banned and so forth. So many Northerners saw sin in the celebration of the winter wilding. To these people, the different celebrations of Thanksgiving was far more appropriate. When I say different, only in the New England place or the New England area is where they, you know, kind of honored the New England tradition. You got to understand that these traditions were kind of localized. There was even a Thanksgiving tradition towards Virginia as well. But what Washington did in his declaration, proclamation for Thanksgiving, I think it should have set the tone. That should have been the standard moving forward. But unfortunately, they failed to cling onto it and hold it as our standard. And so That's another form of manipulation, too, when Lincoln brought us the turkey dinner for our Thanksgiving instead of service to him. I've got some more to go through, so we'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
So, in the South, Christmas became very important, and it was a part of the social season. Not surprisingly, the first three states to make Christmas a legal holiday was in the South: Alabama in 1836, and Louisiana and Arkansas in 1838. So, we can see that the South really started growing this whole concept, getting legs to this concept, and so it actually started growing, and in the years of the Civil War, Christmas traditions really began to spread across the country. Children's books played an important role in spreading the customs of celebrating Christmas, especially the tradition of trimmed trees and gifts delivered by Santa Claus. So they started in teaching and indoctrinating the children. Sound familiar? In addition, Sunday school classes encouraged the celebration of a new Christian version of Christmas. Women's magazines were important in suggesting ways to decorate the holidays, as well as how to make these decorations, selling their periodicals and their magazines and so forth. Children's books played an important role in spreading the customs of celebrating Christmas, especially the tradition of trimmed trees and gifts delivered by Santa Claus. Store catalogs, like, you know, this is probably before Sears Roebuck really became popular, but they started doing these prints and promoting items on sale and items, and there's no doubt that Sears and Roebuck was involved in this when they established as well. But this started really entrenching commercialism into Christmas. And at this time, literature and the progressive press had begun to congeal in manipulating the social affairs and moving us away from riotous behavior and into good Christians loving each other. And again, there's nothing wrong with loving each other and being good and so forth.
But I'm just trying to create the connection for you that it was not a, it was not an evolution of, you know, people starting off with, you know, some Christ-like event or something like that, the birth of Christ, because it didn't happen at that point in time of year. Everybody agrees with that. It was President Ulysses S. Grant who declared Christmas a legal holiday in 1870, and the bill to make Christmas holiday was introduced into the House of Representatives by Burton Chauncey Cook of Illinois. It was approved and passed to the Senate on June 24, 1870, when both houses had agreed on the wording. It was passed on to President Grant, who signed it June 28, 1870. Now, I would invite you to actually go and actually read the act, because I'm going to tell you, there's nowhere in there where they mention Christ or the spiritual sacredness of the holiday. As a matter of fact, I would ask you to compare and contrast the declaration of this holiday in contrast to Thanksgiving, the declaration, even many of the declarations by all of the other presidents of Thanksgiving, but more specifically, George Washington and the first proclamation of Thanksgiving for this newly formed constitutional republic. It will actually, the difference is very stark, and you'll go, oh, wow. They don't even mention how this is a Christ or Christian thing. I think that at that point in time, most people that were still alive, because, you know, Grant was a kid when they were having wildings before Christmas really became this civil religious kind of concept. But it took time over the years to get there. Okay, so really, if you read it, they just talk about what businesses are going to be closed and so forth. And by the last quarter of the 19th century, America eagerly decorated trees, caroled, baked, and shopped for the Christmas season. Since that time, materialism, media, advertising, and mass marketing has made Christmas what it is today. The traditions that we enjoy at Christmas today were really invented by blending together customs and these concepts from different countries into what is considered by many to be our own national holiday. Now, I'll even say this, that even these other countries morphed into America's version of Christmas because it was good for business. In other words, businesses who wanted to make money, you know, started promoting this American New Age concept of winter wildings towards this, you know, celebration of the birth of Christ. And they were the ones that actually started creating these same associations. So remember, it was supposedly this nobleman in England that was sharing with the commoners and so forth and bringing them into his home and, you know, having, you know, a good, you know, spiritual and warm, you know, associations. Well, it was actually started in America and it moved to England. And so that's a little ironic, isn't it? The irony kind of kills me. And so that said, many Christians today may not know the details of Christmas, but almost all know that it is a pagan holiday that was infused with celebrating the birth of Christ. Now, as Christians, we can choose when we celebrate the birth of our Savior. But we must remember that we have adopted a spirit to this holiday that sets it apart. We know, and I've said this just a second ago, we know that Christ really wasn't born in December. I don't know precisely what day and so forth. I could probably look it up, and I know that there would be probably different doctrines and so forth that would point to different things. I know that there's a certain time when the shepherds are in the hills with their flocks. And so there's certain times when taxes occur as well. But I think some people that tie the time of tax when... who was it? It wasn't Hagar. It was I forget the name of the king of Israel, but he set out that tax to be collected, and that's when they were killing the firstborn. That was a special tax. That was not a usual tax time. And so if you understand, you know, when it was, then that's great. But we do, I think everybody will agree, it wasn't in the late part of December. But let's do this. Let's not surrender this time of year we call Christmas to paganism. Let us instead focus on the spirit of the holiday. Instead, let's make his spirit the new norm and, you know, the standard for every Christmas season. It's not a bad thing. As a matter of fact, if we move away from the commercialization, heavens forbid that, you know, that stores don't make as much money. Heavens forbid that we actually save and, you know, do good things with our money instead of helping the bottom line of commercialism, corporations, and so forth. And so let's move away from the commercialism of Christmas and towards giving of one's talents, time, and sustenance to those who are truly in need. And not just now, but all year. One of the things that kind of killed me, and I used to hear it all the time, was let's not just do this now, let's do this all year. But, you know, people get burnt out at the end of Christmas and they move into their normal form of operation. And then, oh, it's time for Christmas again. And it's one of those things that it's a tradition that we don't necessarily have to maintain the commercial side of it. What I want to tell you is that I believe that we can become blessed as a nation once again if we start blessing each other. I truly believe that if we literally start making Christmas more special and more sacred and more focused on Christ and in service, just like the service that President Washington was calling for during the first Thanksgiving in America, or I should say the first Thanksgiving in this new Constitutional Republic that Congress unanimously asked him to proclaim. If we do that, I truly believe that we are going to be doing something right and good for our nation, our republic. Service in Christ's name is divine. And with that, I want to wish you Merry Christmas. I know that we all have lots of family traditions. We have expectations. This is a tough time of year, but we shouldn't allow ourselves to get and succumb to the depression of that comes commonly this time of year when we really realize or we start putting it in perspective that what we're dealing with is a concocted, you know, manipulation to getting the common folk, the poor people, to behave better and be, you know, let's just say more gracious with the elitists, because the elitists were getting tired of being pummeled and, you know, harassed and having their stuff burnt and all of that type of stuff. With that, my friends, I wish you the very Merry Christmas that you deserve. I hope that your holidays are bright and especially your Christmas is everything that the Lord means it to be for you. And God bless. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I do need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.